Welcome back to Chironites. I'm Mike Lewis. Let's have a conversation about the gym. Probably not anything you want to talk about. It is something I want to talk about only to the extent that everyone who was going to a gym is probably not going to their gym now. Although there are some gyms that have, particularly places with personal trainers, they've managed to space things out, put barriers around workout areas so people can actually do this. But it's an interesting opportunity to take a look back at the whole notion of gym culture. There is a really dynamite book out called Getting Physical, The Rise of Fitness Culture in America. And here's an interesting thing. I never really thought much about it, but gym culture obviously didn't much exist in the 1950s. Occasionally there's places of where people would work out. But the concept of fitness was a response to the way our jobs shifted from a lot of physical activity to much more what a sociologist referred to as the tyranny of the wheel. In other words, we went from strollers and school buses to cars, and we stripped out much of our on-foot transportation that had been characterized in lives in cities and farms in the 50s, in the 30s, 40s, 50s. And then in the 60s, it started becoming, and then we started getting, fairly rapidly, started getting heavier. And the first response to this whole idea was TV-based workout instructional exercise. And if any of you are as old as me, I was born in 1965, you remember Jack LaLanne. I remember when I was a little kid, my mom, and the funny thing about Jack LaLanne workouts is it always involved, it's funny how it feels very back to the future right now, because if you look at these body weight workouts and a lot of the stuff that, other than the planks and whatnot that you're doing at home right now, even as part of, it's been incorporated into yoga and Pilates and other body weight level workouts. A lot of it was, some of these opportunities or some of these things were done on the Jack LaLanne show, because it always was bring out the kitchen chair, and the kitchen chair was always sort of a bit player in this workout. And I would watch, my mom would always do her sit-ups and her workout in the living room. But then in the 1980s, and we started seeing, like with Jane Fonda, we started seeing it with various fitness, jazzercise, things like that. It all started moving into the gym and kind of stayed there. And that's what we're talking about right now. The gym now is, according to, if you talk to or any health official or you listen to Anthony Fauci with the CDC, they say the gym is, generally speaking, a bad idea. The same way the business that I'm in on the side, bar and restaurant business, it's all of those things. Essentially, Fauci said, the worst places you can go right now, bars, restaurants, gyms. So the gym being a bad idea is because of breathing heavy indoors with strangers is one of the key ways that coronavirus spreads. I mean, the worst way probably is one of those giant beach parties you saw videos of in Florida or Texas, or some of those giant house parties in California. But gyms have always been a place where that have been spreaders regardless. It's a great place to catch a cold, a great place to get the flu, because people would, when they start feeling a little bit bad, they'd feel like, well, maybe I can raise my body temperature, maybe I can work out and feel a little better. And I don't know whether or not that works, but what I do know is there's a lot of sweaty equipment and there's a lot of breathing, heavy breathing, and that means a lot of capacity to spread disease. So there are actually some ideas about what you can do rather than just sort of like snivel about it. Let's actually talk about a few things that you can do to maybe improve this to some way. What they say is if your gym has reopened, and you really, really feel like not going to the gym is affecting your mental health, there are some things to consider. First, what they ask you to do, and this is guidance from CDC and other health officials, is first consider what are the infection levels in your area. If you live in a college town, the huffing and puffing in close proximity to newly returned students is a terrible idea. don't do it. And obviously, Seattle is a college town. Tacoma is too. So consider your gym where it's basis to a college campus. And if it's a lot of young people in there working out a lot, they say that that's actually a bad idea. Look at your infection levels. It's pretty easy to find on most county health. If you're having a spike in infections, generally tend to avoid it. And then ask the gym, and this is a fair question for any gym you go to, and some of them are doing really above and beyond work to try and make sure that it's safe. The capacity of the gym should be way below normal. The patrons should be wearing masks at all times. These are two musts, according to the infectious disease experts. You really shouldn't go into a place that is not at least observing these two things. Within the space, obviously, people should be spread out. There should be, if they can, offer an outdoor alternative. I know that there is a personal trainer gym down the street from where we are here at Cairo, and they're not only are they well spaced out, but you see the folks out in the streets doing a lot of their running, their sprinting, their interval training. That kind of stuff is all now happening. It used to happen to some degree outdoors. A lot more of it is happening outdoors. They're using kind of a semi-parkour park behind the building here as well, and that seems to be what people would see. And I've talked to some of their patrons that seem to be like the place is doing a lot of work to try to make sure that people are keeping at a distance. If you can, go at an unpopular time of day. This is when few others are working out. All of those things enhance your capacity to stay safe inside the gym. And then they say, finally, your individual circumstances also matter. If you're older or immunocompromised, please don't go to the gym. That's absolutely what they would consider an absolute no-no. You should maybe, and you can go online and find, if you look up gym safety measure checklist, you can actually find quite a few companies have put these out for things that you can actually go through and figure out whether or not the gym is a safe place. Now, what would I do in this circumstance? Well, my favorite workout, actually, I work out because I have to, right? It's not necessarily my favorite thing to do. I do a lot of cycling, and so I was going to a lot of the cycling studios, and I gotta say, wow, this is funny because it was more of a hate relationship than anything else. I don't like them. I actually don't like them at all. I think it's ridiculous to be indoors cycling, especially if you're in a town. Well, if you're in a town where the weather is lousy, I guess it makes some sense, but I don't mind so much cycling in bad weather. It's just but I found that 45-minute, it's a 45-minute mostly sprint. I mean, you're working hard the entire 45-minute. There really isn't. I was going to a Flywheel studio here near South Lake Union in Seattle. And I really, it's just not my kind of environment, but I gotta say, it worked. It really worked. In fact, I did a lot of training for sort of the distance rides like the STP, things like that. It did the job. And so I'm a believer in the workout. It's that whole sort of, like the thumping music and inside a gym. I mean, for me, cycling has always been somewhere to get away from things like that. But nonetheless, I got to say the workout was great. And so for me, I've been desperately missing that kind of workout because I feel like it was really keeping me at a good baseline level of fitness. I always worry. I think everyone in my family worries about gaining too much weight. It's so easy to do, especially in a pandemic situation where you're not able to go out and do the stuff that you used to do. And you're spending a lot of time indoors or you're just not able to go to the gym anymore. And so this was my favorite workout, and that is completely off the table at this particular juncture. And this is why also the Peloton thing has gotten incredibly popular. And so when you add all of this stuff together about whether or not you should be out and whether or not you should be out working out, one of the things you should consider is taking a look very closely at what your specific needs are. The upside to all of this has been, and this has been true in a lot of areas with the coronavirus, you see this blossoming of businesses that didn't really exist prior. The online trainers, the online yoga, all of that stuff was there prior, but in nowhere near the numbers that it is right now. And so most people are suggesting, most health officials are suggesting that, yeah, you'll get a chance to get back to the gym. And as a person who used to, before the cycling thing, I used to do a lot of pickup basketball. And I miss it terribly. I mean, I would rather be out there doing that for my working out than stuff inside my house or running, you know, God forbid, running in the neighborhood or biking somewhere. I really miss what I used to be able to do. They would say that to the extent that you can find an online something or other to get your workout in, keep at it, because it is going to be very, very difficult to, one, wait forever for your gym to open back up, if it has opened back up, to wait until you feel comfortable going in there. And if you do feel comfortable going in there, then to find the right hour when you can go in there, because many gyms are not going to reopen. It's going to be very much like the restaurant industry. You're going to see a serious decline in the number of places that are even open once we get through all of this. And of course, we will get through all of this. And so you're not going to actually be able to do much of that. And so when you're looking at all of those issues regarding your gym and coronavirus, what the experts would say is that right now, your philosophically, what you should be doing is working to keep kind of a base level. If you strongly link your mental health to working out, and I notice that for me, if I stop riding the bicycle enough, if I stop going on long walks or doing the other things I do to try and stay in at least a little bit of shape or at least burn off that excess energy, I find that it definitely makes me a crankier person. And I think there's a lot of people out there like it. And if you're in a job right now that's pretty physical, well, you're getting a lot of that. I mean, you're still much more in the 1940s and 1950s model where you're burning a lot of that energy at work. But I'll tell you what, you check out the Cairo studio ever on Facebook, you'll see a lot of sitting around here. And for as much as people sort of get worked up rhetorically, they don't necessarily get worked up physically in this place. And so it becomes really important to follow some of those tips. The other tips that they suggest, and there's been like three big articles that have come out on this because they've found that they've had spreading events at gyms that have not been following the correct protocol. I don't think that's been true in Washington State, at least what I've been able to look into and talking to health officials. There haven't really been any issues here. There have been issues in a couple of states, Florida, of course, being among them, because Florida's always going to be among them. And in a couple of other places, I think in North Carolina as well, one gym being sort of an unusual spreader situation. And so they would also recommend that if you do decide to return to the gym earlier than maybe conventionally health officials would say is a good idea, the things you need to do also are potentially bring your own disinfectant of some sort. You cannot be certain about how often the gyms themselves are doing this. The gyms are supposed to be wiping down everything between every customer. And I'm assuming that what you're seeing in, say, an area like this where there's a lot of attention being paid to that, that may be true, but you can't always guarantee it. Someone can make a mistake and not do this. So they're actually suggesting that you walk in there like you would into your own home and be prepared to clean the equipment that you're going to be using. And if you can, maybe even clean it after you're done. That is the way that we're all going to stay a little bit safer in here. And then the last thing that they recommend is if you are feeling in any way not up to snuff, if you are feeling in any way a little bit sick, whether or not you think you have coronavirus or not, stay home. Because the idea that you can actually affect someone's immune system by giving them a cold or giving them just the standard flu and actually make them a little bit more susceptible to coronavirus or just make them more of a spreader should they get infected is a big, big issue that I think everyone's worried about coming into winter. I mean, we're right now dealing with a situation where we're having a pretty decent, not great, but pretty decent infection rates in terms of it's been leveling off. It isn't really high. We're not seeing a lot of people. We're getting, you know, in the low hundreds in infections. The death rate is dropping somewhat. It's not where we need it to be, but it's better than it was. All of these things, the health officials in Washington State are really concerned about what's going to happen when things start getting colder. I mean, we just saw the last couple of days of rainstorms. We're getting a little bit more rain tonight. Apparently, the winter feels like it arrived very quickly, at least certainly fall did. And so we're all going to have to make a lot of decisions about how we modify that behavior, because I think the worry and the reason I think that all of these gym stories have come out is simple. We're getting to a period of time in the year when we are not going to be able to do all of the outdoor stuff. I mean, if you think about it, I feel that we were a bit lucky in that when the pandemic began, we were rolling through spring and into summer. And so we had this opportunity. I mean, the bars and restaurants did, the ones that could do something like this, had the opportunity to move people outdoors. I mean, we have a pretty short outdoor season up here in the Pacific Northwest. The bars had that opportunity, and the gyms, well, the gyms had to close entirely, but even the people who didn't want to go back to the gym also had the opportunity of running outside, walking outside. You see many more cyclists than ever. If you've tried to purchase a bicycle in the past 3 months, you've probably been stymied if you managed to find one. Bicycle sales are through the roof, electric bicycle sales even faster. And so, but all of that speaks to the fact that we had this wide open time in the Pacific Northwest, a decent summer, not a great one, but not a bad one. We're at the turning point now. We are going to probably get another couple of weeks of nice weather. You know, we usually get a little bit of sort of a relief in October. And then we are going to settle in for the standard Pacific Northwest winter. I don't know if the predictions are true. It's supposed to be a wet one, as always, and we'll see. So I think this is why the health officials have been particularly focused on gyms. If you do decide to go back, please be careful when you do. I know that I am probably going to hold off a little bit longer because it's a concern. It's a concern, I think, for everyone, and hopefully we can roll through at least the first couple of months of fall and into winter and not have a whole bunch of problems. Coming up in the next segment, we're going to talk catalytic converters. I had mine stolen a couple of years ago from my Toyota truck. It was for the Platinum. Chris Sullivan is going to tell us all about it. And this weird dynamic that we're not entirely certain, Chris and I, that there's really any incentive to stop this, because it seems like, well, everyone's making money on this deal, except, of course, the motorists themselves. Coming up right after the break. To Cairo Nights. I've been a victim of this crime, one of these crimes that seems to run in waves throughout Seattle. It happens in movie theater, well, not so much anymore, movie theater, parking lots, any places where cars sit for a while. You go back, you start up your car, suddenly your exhaust sounds like a roar, and it's because someone has stolen your catalytic converter for the valuable metals inside. Chris Sullivan is on the story right now. Chris, so are we seeing a rash of these thefts again here in Seattle?
Yep. I got a note from a tow truck driver who listens to the morning show, and he was like, man, I've towed 25 Toyota Priuses this month, wow. and they've all had their catalytic converters ripped. I'm like, are you serious? He goes, yeah, and I have a friend who owns a shop who's done 30-plus replacements just this year, and actually checked in with a station advertiser, Bucky's, the auto care service, and they're like, yeah, we're running 20 to 30% above where we normally are for replacements. So it sounds like the thieves have made their way back up here. I was tracking it, and these catalytic converter thieves were actually hitting the Bay Area pretty hard last year. Bay Area, Sacramento, I saw a whole bunch of stories there, and then all of a sudden now they've just moved back up here again, because I guess the copper wire thieves come in, you know, February through June, and then the catalytic converter thieves move and rotate with them for the fall, late summer and fall.
And what is it about, I think I know, but what is it about the catalytic converter that makes it such a target for thieves?
Well, there's precious metals inside of them. There's platinum and there's palladium. And palladium right now is going for $2,300 an ounce. So it's wow. the precious metals that they're looking to do. Now, you have to do some work, obviously, to get to those particular metals to get them out of there. But the thieves don't care about that. They just go in with a Sawzall and basically cut on either side of your exhaust and pull the piece out and go. And they'll give it to a recycler, or they may have their own, you know, in-house operation where they strip it themselves and then sell the precious metals. But yeah, that's what it's all about, is stripping the box to get the, what is it, 2 grams of palladium per and maybe 3 to 7 grams of platinum them in each one, and that's what they're going for.
And so how long does it take them to grab one? It's a Prius.
90 seconds, maybe a little less, because what the police are telling me is they jack them up really quickly, pop right underneath, use a Sawzall with a metal blade, and just, you know, cut either side, jack it down, and they're out. And I mean, it's really quick. You told me off air that you had it happen with your Toyota truck, and that used to be the popular one because the Toyota trucks based and 4Runners, because of their height, people could slide underneath. Now, because the Prius is so light, it's just really easy. It could be a one-man job to just jack it up really quickly, zip, zip on either side, and they're out.
Yeah, it's funny because I noticed when I had been talking to a friend about it, and I remember, you know, commenting because I had a 92 Toyota truck. And four-wheel drive truck, so it was super. You would make it easier. It was practically a toaster for these guys to get the catalytic converter from. And I remember being bragging like it still had the original one in there, which was shocking because I had this truck until 4 years ago. And then, sure enough, as soon as I sort of got cocky about it, the next day I go out, I start, I hear that loud roaring sound, and sort of like, oh man, it's done. So I went to the muffler shop, and of course they had several that had been in already that week, a lot in my neighborhood. And I would imagine that if you are stealing things from a Prius, you're really going heavy at these very blue towns, because there is a lot of Prii in this area. It seems like it'd be a target-rich environment.
Yeah, and well, it tells you why they were down in the San Francisco Bay Area last year as well.
Precisely,
I mean,
right.
You're hitting a spot where they know that they're still getting a decent-sized converter that's out there. And some of the older Priuses, I think, may even have 2 units. I'm not sure if that's, I mean, one version of a might. But either way, yeah, it's a target-rich environment. And so, yeah, I mean, it started with our truck driver and our tow truck driver. And, yeah, the shops confirm it, that they've even had trouble getting the pieces, the parts in shop, because they're so busy. They're also hitting larger vans as well. And I heard anecdotally that a church that had some passenger vans also got hit with their converters taken. So, yeah, it's just, you know, the flavor of the month for the thieves in this cyclical, you know, crime pattern of, you know, whatever they're going for now, or what's the easiest hit, or whatever's worth the most money. And as I said, with palladium worth $2,300 an ounce, there's 2 grams per. You know, you have to do a little work, but you jack 13 Priuses and you've got $2,300 worth of palladium.
Yeah, but do you ever wonder whether or not there is any incentive to actually stop this crime? You get my drift?
Yeah, I mean, I get it. As crimes go, considering the things that, you know, our local police departments are letting go these days in terms of property crimes or, break-ins of cars, I mean, I'm not sure what you can do about it because it can happen so fast. You don't necessarily see it when it happens. It's like until you turn the key. And, I mean, if they wanted to, they could go after every unscrupulous recycler that's out there that looks the other way because you aren't supposed to do cash deals with this. You aren't supposed to. You're supposed to check serial numbers and whatnot. But, yeah, so I kind of get your point, but it's kind of like chasing your tail for a small amount, even though for each person who has their converter ripped, it's a huge pain in the you-know-what.
Right. And that's – but it feels like – you know, when I had a year ago, I had a motorcycle stolen. And I had insurance on this motorcycle. So what happened? And the motorcycle also was recovered, but it was parted out in some tweaker house in Issaquah. But then I realized, like, well, I'd been paying insurance for a long time on the bike. The insurance company had made a fair bit of money on me. They replaced the motorcycle, so the motorcycle seller was happy. I got a new motorcycle. The person managed to supply their drug habit. They stole a bike. It's like there was no real incentive.
No downside.
There's no downside for anyone involved in the process. And I started thinking, like, because right now with existing technology, we could embed GPS code inside frames of every single vehicle. We could render car theft almost non-existent if we chose to, but we don't. And the catalytic converter thing is one of those things, because I have friends who take scrap metal to recyclers, you know, here in Seattle and other places, and they said that they watch the transactions roll through. People walk in with several of these things and say, oh, I'm working a wrecking yard or whatnot, and watch the transactions happen anyway, because who makes money? Well, these guys make great money because they're paying pennies on the dollar. And I'm not blaming the recycling industry, but it feels to me, and I've had at least five different listeners call me and say, you've got to look into the recycling end of it because that's where the problem is. If you can't sell it anywhere, if it becomes like ivory, suddenly, you know, It gets very, very difficult to move. But right now, it's not like ivory. Right now, it's like aluminum, and you can move this stuff pretty rapidly.
Yeah, it's true, and that's why it's so hard. So the only thing you can really do as a consumer who might lose their converter, even as we're having this conversation, you know, is you try to park your car in a place that's well lit, have security cameras there. But we had a listener this morning who said they had all that done, but the thieves saw the cameras and were able to hide their faces and did it anyway, so they didn't get any usable faces to look at. So, you know, you could put your permanent marker on every part of your car, but who's going to go take the time to do that? So, I mean, the only way is to try to make your car less attractive to steal, which would mean park it in a garage. But if it's not in a garage all the time, it's pretty susceptible and it's really quick.
What about so with mine, for example, the replacement converter did not have platinum in it. It was, I don't think palladium was the issue in the Toyota converters. I think it was just platinum. It did not have that in there. It was still a catalytic converter. Apparently still did the job regarding emissions or burning that extra bit of unburned gas. What about that? I mean, why, maybe from a manufacturing end, if the replacement one is not going to be stolen, only the OEM, only the original one from the factory, then why not just come out with one that's less likely to be stolen?
Yeah, it's a very good point. I mean, it's a very interesting one, and I didn't, go back to the dealerships that ask that particular question. But, yeah, I mean, why not? I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to have these particular precious metals in it. But I can tell you what, that there's a big enough industry going on here that if you go online looking for catalytic converter safety, you'll find 50 websites with 50 different names of all their cat shields, the plate that you can solder under the or bolt to the underside of your car that covers it so the thieves can't get it. I mean, you could buy that for $250. Look, seriously, they're like three or four different versions that are $200 or $300 each if you just looked it up online. So obviously there's a lot of people making money on this thing all the way around. And you're right. I mean, at the end of the day, if you get it covered by insurance like you did, I mean, the only downside is the giant pain in the backside when it happens to, and you have to deal with it on the front end. But if it works out, you're right. There seems to be a rather interesting circle of life with these things.
That was Chris Sullivan on the apparently a rash of thefts in catalytic converters. I'm hoping I can keep whatever ones that I have still attached to their vehicles. Chris, thank you so much for joining Chironites.
Yeah, anytime, Mike.
And coming up on Cairo Nights, we are going to be talking at the turn of the hour with Stacy, Joe Rost. Mariners still have a chance at getting in the playoffs. And, well, it's a small chance. And then, of course, we've got the Seahawks and their ongoing injury issues after the break. Welcome back to Cairo Nights. It is that time of the evening where we match wits to the extent we have any. Match wits with the Questron 700. It asks the questions. We gamely try to provide the answers. We do as best we can. I am not sure always we measure up, but every now and then, I think we win. Shane, ready?
Always.
And Frank?
Yes.
All right.
Fired up.
And here we go. Frank, first one goes to you because this has a potentially comic book overtones.
Oh, okay.
How much of your body would you cybernetically enhance if you could?
Oh, golly. Really? Maybe 5%? Cybernetically. Does this mean like a cyborg? Like,
yeah, it means exactly like that.
Okay. Yeah, maybe 5%, 10%, maybe some joints, knees, that sort of thing.
Yeah, that makes some sense. Yeah. I mean, in fact, the fact of the matter is that most of us are going to have to do at least some of that anyway. Shane?
I think I could go with maybe a quarter, a good 25%. I think, you know, I could maybe replace an arm or a leg with maybe a machine gun or, you know, a rocket launcher or something cool, something to make me like out of a Danny Trejo movie.
Yeah, or something like out of a Neal Stephenson novel, like a skull gun or something like that. Something like that. Make you really attractive. I would say, you know, it's kind of, I think Frank's on to a good idea. I'm trying to think of what would be fun and then what I would need. You know, for those of us getting older, maybe lower back cybernetically enhanced would be great. Maybe your knees, like Frank said that. And also, honestly, I wouldn't mind like speeding up cerebral function. I wouldn't mind actually being able to have a little bit more immediate access to all those names I can't remember anymore. All right, let's go for number two. All right. Shane?
Yep.
This one's for you. If you had to replace your hands with objects already in your house, what would you replace your hands with?
Oh, I think if I had to replace my hands with anything, you know, like the metal tongs you use when you're barbecuing or you're using the deep fryer, I think I would go with the metal tongs. It's probably the utensil I use the most while I'm
cooking.
Edward
Tong Hands.
Yeah, Shane Dog Tong Hands, they call me. That's what I think would probably work the best if I had to pick anything.
All right, tongs. Frank?
You know, I'm basically on that.
You'd probably go for a dog comb, maybe. All right, we're going to skip Frank for now.
You do yours, and I'll come back.
We seem to have lost Frank for a while. My guess is I'd probably put a crescent wrench on one.
Oh, that's good.
And I'm trying to think of what the other one would be. I guess the other one would have to be, the other one would have to be probably like a vice grip or something. I'd need something to hold it and then something to turn something. So I'm guessing that's what I would do. Although, in my heart of hearts, I am still thinking about spatula. Frank?
Okay, I'm going for if I had a hammer on one and I think a nice cross-cut saw, very sharp, on the other.
Oh, that's actually kind of a great idea.
Between the two of them, I could get something done.
All right, I got you. We'll go with me first on this one. I guess it's my turn to have to step into the breach.
To suffer.
What have you created that you are most proud of? It's hard to say because, I think that what I would say probably mostly any really good friendships that I have, but I don't know that I would – that those are not a sole creation, right? Those
take, no, they count.
But I would say I've put a lot of work into those. So I guess I'll stick with that. I'll stick with that. I've tried to think of what I would actually have physically created. I mean, you know, there's like a whole bunch of forgettable news stories, a few actually good ones, a whole lot of radio chatter. None of that is probably more important to me than friends.
Shane?
I mean, I've created some stuff, like some podcasts and some radio shows that I was really proud of in college. But I think if there's one thing that I'm most proud of that I've created, I'll just go on a limb and say my intellect, just being able to teach myself how to learn and be able to be a lifelong learner. And that's the thing I'm most proud of, is my education.
We need to note, because he tends not to do this, that he's dyslexic. And he overcame that disability in order to do that,
yeah,
which
exactly.
Makes it even more impressive.
Makes it more impressive, right.
Yeah, yeah. My turn. My daughter. You know, I of course I'm a co-creator,
right?
Because I think thank God she takes after her mom much more than me. But absolutely, that is the penultimate creation that I'm going to leave behind on this planet.
All right, we got time for one more, Shane. All right, good.
Lightning round.
All right. We'll go to Frank first.
Sure.
Frank, and this is an easy one for you. What chokes you up when you think about it?
Anything happening to my family members, and particularly my daughter.
All right. That's a great one. Shane?
I would have to say thinking about my family as well. Anything happening to my immediate family, my mom, my brother, my dad, my grandparents, it will always make me shed a tear if it's something that it seems all too real.
Yeah, for me, I would say... I would probably have said family, but I'm going to go a little different direction.
Okay.
I'd actually say when I see something on the news, or something happy, something that really, really affects me in a way, somebody who had a bad run of things finally getting a really good turn, finally getting something nice happen to
catching
them.
Catching a break.
Yeah, catching a break. I think that watching that happen to somebody who deserves it forever kind of moves me quite a bit. All right, folks, thank you for joining us for the Random Question Robot. Coming up, we're going to talk to Stacey Joe, and apparently there is some weird combination of games that could allow the Mariners to just squeak into the playoffs. We certainly hope so, right after the break.